Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, September the 4th, 1995. In the village center this evening, our speaker is Ron Burke. His subject, The Lighter Side of Faith, Amusing Grace. Let's listen in on Ron.
Tahoe Yosemite, in celebration of our 40th wedding anniversary. And it was a delightful time. We had a rental car going through the mountains, and we discovered a rather interesting thing about ourselves, and that is that we still sit close to each other in the car, just like we did when we were young, when we were first married. And the only difference now being that when we were young, we sat close to each other because we were young and freshly and madly in love, and now we sit close to each other so we can hear each other.
What did he say, Red? What did he say?
How are you? So it is nice to stand before a crowd of my peers. As I was about to say, I will be standing before you on several occasions this week, and I think maybe you deserve to know a little bit more about me than was on the bulletin board. I'm not sure who wrote that, but it was all right to a certain degree. Let me fill in a little bit more about myself, clarify some things. I have lots of credentials, I like to think, you know, being around as long as I have. I am an ELCA clergyman. I've been in campus ministry. I've done some national things. And I guess I'm right now in a position where the best title would be worker priest, tent making ministry. I do ministry and I do secular things. I kind of combine that life, and it's kind of fun. My ministry is basically being a speaker and a retreat leader and also a writer. My work is a lot of things. I am a professional speaker. I go around doing after dinner speeches and that kind of thing to any group that will pay, and a lot of them that don't. I also am an actor. I do TV commercials. I do what we call in the trade industrials, corporate training tapes, promotional tapes, those kinds of things. But the primary thing that I like to think of myself as, and what most people seem to identify me with, is that I am a rancher, and I am a goat rancher. For some reason, everybody said, "Hi, how are the goats, Ron?" They don't ask me, you know, what do you think of the third chapter of Mark, or how are the goats? And that's all right. I thoroughly enjoy that. I am a fifth-generation Texas rancher. Currently, I am the owner, through the gift of inheritance, of a ranch that my grandfather put together around the turn of the century, almost 100 years old. Very proud of that. And we raise, well, I'm not sure I can use the word up here. It's a four-letter word at Holden Village, but it's B-E-E-F. And it's one of the things we do. And they let me come in here anyway. And the other thing we do is we raise Angora goats, which are producers of mohair. A lot of people, even in Texas, don't know much about Angora goats, and the rest of the United States really knows very little about them, it seems. Some 95% of the Angora goats in the United States are in the hill country of Texas. And the only other two places, I won't say only other two places, but the two other major places in the world where they are produced is Turkey, where they originated. Ankara is where the word Angora comes from, and then in South Africa. So we like to think we're a very special group. And it's a fun business being in the goat business, and it's nice to be here with some sheep. Throughout the week, you will hear me make some comments about goats and sheep and find that out, find out my true opinion about both of those species. But that's just a little bit about myself. Our ranch is located in the hill country of Texas, right in the middle of Texas, and close to a little town called Pontotoc, P-O-N-T-O-T-O-C. I do not have a blackboard here to write it out on. It's about, as the mockingbird flies, about 125 miles north-northwest of San Antonio, about 100 miles west of Austin. How many of you here have heard of Pontotoc, Texas? Some of the Texans have, good. None of the outsiders have. Okay. Well, if you haven't heard of Pontotoc, that's understandable because Pontotoc is a small town. Pontotoc is so small that one rooster can wake up the whole town. So small that their power plant is a Sears diehard. And as you might expect, it's a country town. Their zip code is EIEIO. So country that they still think that E.T. stands for Ernest Tubbs. Pontotoc, like a lot of small towns nowadays, is going through some economic hard times, so that a lot of the people there have to get another job. For example, we have a veterinarian in Pontotoc who has just taken up taxidermy. And he has a sign over his office that says, "Either way, you'll get your dog back." Pontotoc, this is what's called a warm-up act in the business. Pontotoc has lots of things. One thing it does not have a hospital, so that if you get sick in Pontotoc, you either got to go to that veterinarian or to the hospital or doctors in some other community. And that's exactly what happened to my father when he came down with cancer. And during the final 2 years of his life, he was in hospitals and visiting doctors and other communities on several occasions. And one time he was in San Antonio for some treatment and some tests, and he called me up in San Marcos, where I live, and said that they were ready to release him and wondered if I could come over and check him out and drive him back to Mason, where he was living. And I said, "Sure, be happy to." So I go over, check him out of the hospital, and we get loaded up in the car. We drive out of the hospital, and those of you familiar with San Antonio, it's the Nick's Hospital, right downtown, right on the river. And we got several blocks away, and suddenly my dad said, "My glasses. Where are my glasses? I've lost my glasses." Well, we started looking all over the car, and we could not find my dad's glasses. The only thing we figured out was he'd left them back in the hospital. So I started making right-hand turns in those narrow, crooked, crowded, busy, one-way streets of San Antonio. Got about halfway back. Suddenly my dad says, "Ronald," that's what he called me, he says, "Ronald, I found my glasses." And I said, "Oh, where were they?" And he said, "I was wearing them the whole time." Well, by then I was a little hot, tired, irritated, frustrated, and I said, "Well, you crazy old outfit, you were looking through them the whole time." And he said, "Me crazy? You were looking at them the whole time." Now, I hate to admit it, but that's not the only time in my life that that kind of thing has happened to me, where I've been looking for something, just looked all over, couldn't find it, and the whole time it was just right out there in plain view. As we'd say in Pontotoc, if it had been a snake, it'd bit you. Well, in my few years on this old earth, I found out that the same thing holds true, at least for me, in regard to some of the eternal verities of life, that there are some obvious truths just right out there in plain view for all of us to see, and yet for some reason or another, it has taken me a long time to see, and maybe even a longer time sometime to admit some of these obvious truths of life. And that's kind of what I would like to do this week, is to share some of these obvious truths that I have discovered and, quite frankly, wish I had discovered a long time ago. And tonight, the one that I would like to talk about is my pet subject, my most favorite obvious truth, and that is that humor is a very important part of life, a very important part of our Christian faith. I'd like to begin by quoting one of America's leading theologians, one Irma Bombeck. This is a classic column of hers from years back. You may have read it. "In church the other Sunday," says Irma, "I was intent on a small child who was turning around, smiling at everyone. He wasn't gurgling, spitting, humming, kicking, tearing the hymnals, or rummaging through his mother's handbag. He was just smiling. Finally, his mother jerked him about and in a stage whisper that could be heard in a little theater off Broadway said, 'Stop that grinning, you're in church.' And with that, she gave him a belt on his hind side and as the tears rolled down his cheeks added, 'That's better,' and returned to her prayers." And Irma says, "What must they think, these children of the 90s? We sing, make a joyful noise unto the Lord, while our faces reflect the sadness of one who has just buried a rich aunt who left everything to her pregnant hamster." "Suddenly I was angry," she said. "It occurred to me the entire world is in tears, and if you're not, then you better get with it. I wanted to grab this child with a tear-stained face close to me and tell him about my God, the happy God, the smiling God, the God who had to have a sense of humor to have created the likes of us. I wanted to tell him that he is an understanding God, a God who understands little children who pick their noses in church because they're bored. He's a God who understands the man sitting out in the parking lot reading the comics while his wife is attending church. He's a God who even understands my shallow prayers that implore, 'If you can't make me thin, at least make my friends look fat.'" What a fool, I thought, says Irma. Here was a woman sitting next to the only light left in our civilization, the only hope, our only miracle, our only promise of infinity. If he couldn't smile in church, where was there left to go? End of the gospel according to Irma. We may not always know it by what goes on in today's worship and other church activities, but smiles and laughter, joy and good humor, celebrations and good times and fun times, they are a very valid, important part of our Christian tradition. I believe that amusing grace is just as much a part of our Christian heritage as is amazing grace. For example, a couple of lesser-known church traditions. One is the traditional story that says Lazarus laughed after Jesus brought him back from the dead. And I understand even to this day in Bethany, the home of Lazarus has long been called the House of Laughter. And another tradition is that of the early Greek Orthodox Church to celebrate the Monday after Easter as a day of laughter. This was a day when clergy and laity would gather in the church and they would tell stories and swap tall tales and entertain each other with jokes. And the reason given for this was that they felt this was the most fitting way of celebrating the big joke, the practical joke that God played on Satan when he raised Jesus from the dead. I think that's kind of a neat tradition, and one that deserves to be resurrected itself. And it seems obvious to me that people who came up with this idea believe that God has a sense of humor, that God laughs. As Harvey Cox says, God laughs because he knows how it turns out in the end. And if God laughs, then it seems logical that he thinks it's okay for his people to laugh and have fun too. Robert K. Johnson, in a book entitled The Christian at Play, contends that the prevalence of festivals, feasting, and dance in the Old Testament is a sign that God's people back then had fun. And he contends that Jesus also had fun. If you will remember, one of the major accusations against Jesus, and some scholars would even say that one of the main reasons why he got crucified was because he didn't act like a holy man. He was always running around with those party animals of his day. He had fun. And although nowhere does the New Testament specifically say that Jesus laughed, I agree with Charles Schulz, the creator of the comic strip Peanuts, when he says, no one would have been invited to dinner as often as Jesus was unless he was interesting and had a sense of humor. I don't know whether that'll stand up to great theological criticism or not, but it kind of makes sense to me. Also, biblical scholars point out that there is a lot of humor in Jesus' parables, if you've ever really sat down and analyzed some of those. Scholars will tell us that there is quite a bit of humor in the New Testament, in Jesus' sayings and so forth and so on. One of the problems, if you understand humor at all, is language. It's hard to translate humor from one language to another. So much humor is based on wordplay. So that we lose a lot of that humor of the New Testament because we just don't speak the same language that Jesus did. And I, for one, just can't imagine Jesus performing a healing miracle or feeding 5,000 hungry people without there being a whole lot of smiling, happy faces in that crowd. Kind of like at dinner at Holden Village. Mark Libano has a book out with the provocative title, Is There Fun After Paul? And Libano says, God created the world for fun, not as a place for human beings to work through their sins, nor as a place for rewarding the good and punishing the bad. The agony model for Christian life only fits if we stop at the crucifixion. The reality of the resurrection beyond the crucifixion moves the church and Christians to celebration. A little boy caught the essence of what that means when his mother, after Sunday school, asked him what he had learned on that particular day. And he said, "Well, I learned that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him shall have everlasting life." Fortunately, there have always been people who saw this ever-laughing, amusing grace side of faith and kept it alive. In addition to those early Greeks telling jokes in church, there was good old St. Augustine proclaiming from the rooftops, "The Christian should be an alleluia from head to foot." And during that gloomy period of history known as the Dark Ages, there was St. Francis of Assisi telling his followers, "It is not fitting when one is in God's service to have a gloomy face or a chilling look." And he summoned his followers to be Jucculatoris Domini. Translated into Holdenese, that means God's merry people. And along with this title went the challenge of being a part of the adventure of expressing thanks to God for spreading a merry heart to disillusioned and disheartened people. And another shaft of light in the Dark Ages was one Saint Teresa of Avila, who once uttered the classic prayer from somber, serious, sullen saints, "Save us, O Lord." And speaking of St. Teresa, I find it interesting that she was always on the lookout for novices to join her order. And she was looking for three things: women who knew how to eat, sleep, and laugh. And her explanation was that if they ate heartily, they were healthy. If they slept well, they were more likely free of serious sins. And if they laughed, they had the necessary disposition to survive a difficult life in service to their Lord. Kind of a good thing for church evangelism teams to look for. So St. Teresa, St. Francis, they were just two in a long line of fools for Christ. People who believe fervently that no matter how bad life is now, there's always reason to hope for something better in the future. That there is something like amusing grace. Fools for Christ believe like Cal Samra. Christ came to us bringing peace, love, joy, laughter, and healing. And when he returns again, he will lead his people in a chorus of laughter. Because as the old saying goes, the devil can't stand the sound of laughter. So laughter and smiles, joy and good humor, celebration and amusing grace, they all have a vital, a very important part in our Christian heritage. The biblical tradition and church tradition which has been passed down to us. And amusing grace has, as far as I am concerned, just as important a place in the church and in the lives of Christians today. I am convinced that another one of those obvious truths of life is that humor is holy. And you can quote me on that. Humor is holy. And I believe that humor is holy because it has the power to heal. And as the way I understand it, that's what Christianity is all about, healing. Healing broken bodies and broken minds, healing broken souls and broken spirits, healing broken relationships between human beings, broken relationships between human beings and God. There's an old story going around. You may have heard it. It's been in several versions, but I just like to tell this story, so we're about to hear it again. Elderly couple sitting out on the front porch one evening, rocking away, and suddenly the old woman, I have to watch my language here, told me. In Texas, that's a good word, you know. This old woman turns to the old man, and she says, "I'm hungry." The old man says, "You're hungry? Well, tell me what you want, and I'll go get it for you. Would you do that?" "Sure, I'll be happy to." "Okay, I want me." "Oh, wait a minute. You better write this down. You're getting so old and forgetful." "I don't need to write it down. Just tell me what you want." Okay. "I want me a chocolate sundae. I want vanilla ice cream. I want chocolate syrup all over it. Cover it up with whipped cream. And in the middle of it all, I want a great big old red shiny cherry. You got it?" "I got it." "Don't need to write it down." "I don't need to write it down." So the old gentleman gets up and leaves. He's gone about 30 minutes, comes back carrying a paper sack. Sets the paper sack down in front of the old woman. She opens it up, reaches down inside, pulls out a hot dog. She looks at the hot dog. She looks at the old man. She says, "You forgetful old fool, I told you to write it down. I wanted relish on it." Now, if you laugh at that, you tell them something about your age. I think it's another one of those obvious truths of life that most of us like a little relish on our hot dogs, and we like a little relish in our lives. And if you're like me, one of the main ways you put relish in your life is through laughter and humor, what you just did. Good, you're very cooperative. And humor is one way that God, I think, blesses us, that he gives us his amusing grace, the healing that this amusing grace can bring to us. Humor can heal us physically. It can heal broken bodies and broken minds. If you've been doing any reading lately, any listening to television or radio, you undoubtedly have been exposed to some of the research that is going on now in the medical community about the physical benefits of laughter. For example, they have discovered that laughter is just good exercise. Somebody has called laughter internal jogging. Just think of what happens to your body when you have a big old belly laugh. Think of what it does to your tummy and your chest and your shoulders and your neck. You kind of relax, you know. It's good exercise. It's good for us. Some of the other benefits that they have discovered physically about laughter is that it can double the heart rate in as little as 20 seconds and hold it there for 3 to 5 minutes. Also, if you know anything about living, you know that breathing is kind of important. And there's I'm not a physiologist enough to explain all the body chemistry, but one of the ideas of breathing is to bring in the good oxygen-filled clean air into our bodies, convert that into all the stuff that's supposed to be, and it kind of turns into bad air. And then you want to get rid of that bad air. So the idea is to get in as much good air as you can and get rid of as much bad air. Well, laughter is an excellent way to do that. In fact, somebody who didn't have anything else to do took one of these radar guns that they put on baseball pitchers and timed the air being expelled from a person when they were laughing, and it was up to 70 miles an hour. So you might want to check today and see about your neighbor's speed of laughter, whatever. And that's good. Breathing, that is very good for us physically. They've also discovered that the act of laughter does something to the body chemistry, a little thing called endorphins, which are the body's natural tranquilizers, are created in the act of laughter, and that's good for us. It helps us deal with our anguish and our distress. Donald Law says, in the Orient, people believe that the basis of all disease was unhappiness. Thus, to make a person happy again was to restore them to health. And Dr. Bernie Siegel agrees with that when he concludes, the simple truth is, happy people generally don't get sick. All which confirms what the writer of Proverbs knew years ago, laughter is good medicine. So humor is good for us physically. It is an amusing grace. And laughter is also good for us psychologically. The amusing grace of humor can heal broken souls and spirits, and boy, there are a lot of those in our contemporary society. One of the major enemies in our society today that is fast becoming public enemy number one is stress. Somebody said the American melting pot is now the American pressure cooker. And in case you are one of those rare people who does not know what stress is, you know that stress is a problem in your life when you begin to wonder how many calories there are in fingernails. Or you know that stress is a problem when your teeth grind all night and they're in a glass of water beside your bed. But you really, really, really know that stress is a problem when Baskin-Robbins flavor of the month is Malox Mousse. So stress, it's one of those obvious facts of life. And we in the church are not immune from stress. There are just lots of things happening in the church nowadays to tense up our souls and our spirits. For example, the change that's going on. I've already, in the very short time we've had our group here, said, they did a little thing different there last night at worship than we're used to doing back in small town Texas. And that has to have a little effect upon one's stress level. Change in the church is hard for a lot of people to deal with and accept. As somebody has said, the only person who likes change is a wet baby. One of my favorite stories I heard at a pastor's conference in Texas several years ago, where the speaker was telling about back in the days when farmers still used mules, and there was this old farmer who had four mules, and he named them Baptist, Methodist, Episcopal, and Lutheran. And one day he was out hollering at those mules, and one of his neighbors heard him, and he came over and said, "Why in the world did you name your four mules after those four denominations?" And the old farmer said, "Oh, it was easy. I just named them after their personalities, their characteristics. For example, old Baptist, it's hard to keep him in the road. He's always wanting to go wallowing the water holes. And old Methodist, I can hardly get him away from the barn. He just wants to stay there and eat corn all the time. And Episcopal, hey man, there's one fancy, high-stepping mule. And old Lutheran, well, old Lutheran won't go down no new road, no how, no way." So change, it can bring stress. Now, how do we deal with change? Well, fortunately, there are a lot of obvious ways to deal with stress. But for me, again, humor is one of those very important healing agents in our constant battle against stress. Not long ago, I was speaking at a church banquet, and it was one of those nights every speaker dreams about. I was on a roll. The audience was right with me. It was just a rollicking good time. And right in the middle of all this, a woman at a table right in front suddenly gets out of her seat, down on the floor, on her knees, starts searching around. Well, one of the first things you learn in this business is you don't ignore something like that. That's where everybody else's attention is. So I just stopped and I said, "What's the matter? You lose something?" About that time, she raised up holding a broken necklace, and she said, "Yeah, I laughed so hard my cross fell off." Well, folks, if laughter can help us lose our crosses, if it can relieve us of our burdens, if only for a little while, I think it has a place in the church, in our lives, in our society, wherever. Several years ago, I attended a conference on Christianity and humor at the Presbyterian version of Holden Village Ghost Ranch in northern New Mexico. Some of you may be familiar with it. And there was a psychiatrist on the staff who kept making the point over and over and over again that laughter and smiles and good humor and good times and celebration, those are not luxuries in life. They're not luxuries. In reality, those are necessities. We need to laugh. We need to have good times. We need to celebrate and enjoy ourselves because those act as buffers against all the pain and tension and tragedy of which this old life is so full. Plain fact of the matter is, if we couldn't laugh, we'd all go crazy. As somebody has said, love makes the world go round, but laughter keeps us from jumping off. And I really agree with what Grady Nutt, the late great prime minister of humor on that classical educational TV show, Hee Haw, said, and that is that laughter is the hand of God on the shoulder of a troubled world. So laughter, joy, humor is good therapy for broken souls and spirits. We need them to survive. And fortunately, they're readily available, part of God's ever-present amusing grace. And humor is good for us socially. Humor can heal broken relationships. John Holmes has said, it is well to remember that the entire population of the universe, with one trifling exception, is composed of others. I find that to be a very provocative statement. And another one of those obvious truths that we live in a world full of other people. In reality, there are very few hermits. Most of us live our lives in very close relationships with other people, our family, our friends, our co-workers, our family of faith, whomever. So other people and how we relate to them is going to be a major factor in whether our life is pleasant or unpleasant, happy or unhappy, de-stressful or distressful, whether our life is heaven or hell. Therefore, I think that humor is very vital in healthy relationships. As Alan Alda put it, when people are laughing, they're generally not killing one another. And that great Dane Victor Borge caught another basic truth in his classic statement, laughter is the shortest distance between two people. And a lot of current research into communication has backed that up with some rather interesting findings. For example, they have discovered... Frowning physicians face twice as many malpractice suits as do smiling doctors. I don't know whether it's true or not, but it makes sense. The one, though, that I find most interesting is that thieves who hold up convenience stores divulge that they generally do not rob clerks who greet them with a smile. So if you're working in a convenience store, smile to everybody who comes in. Confucius had an old saying, if you can't smile, don't open the shop. I do this kind of thing a lot in the church, but lately I've developed a little workshop on humor in the workplace, and I've been doing it several times this past year in corporate settings in Texas, that business, which is always concerned about the bottom line, is suddenly realizing that happy workers produce happy customers, and happy customers produce happy budgets, which produces happy stockholders, which makes everybody happy. So humor is not just for healthy relationships individually, but also has a much broader scale. So smiling, laughing, a sense of humor helps maintain pleasant relationships. Another important aspect of humor in human relationships is illustrated in another old story. Burglar breaks into the house one evening, and he discovers the safe, and he shines his flashlight on the dial, and he starts twiddling it, trying to find the combination. He does this for several minutes, and suddenly he freezes in terror as he hears right behind him. He turns around. What does he see but a huge Doberman Pinscher, mouth open, fangs bared, apparently just ready to jump all over him and eat him up. Well, he gets his wits about him and realizes the dog's not going to do anything but just stand there and pant, so he says, what the heck? Goes back, starts working on the combination to the safe. Does this for a few more minutes till he freezes again when he hears a voice behind him saying, it's illegal to break into a safe. Slowly he turns around and says, what does he see standing in the middle of the dog's back but a parrot? Saying over and over again, it's illegal to break into a safe. Well, the burglar finally gets his wits about him, realizes that that's all the parrot's going to do and the dog's just going to pant, so I'm going back to the safe. But he can't concentrate because of all the racket going on behind him. And finally, in sheer frustration, he turns around and says, will you two cut it out? How do you expect me to find the combination of this safe when dog, you just and parrot, you're in the middle of his back saying over and over and over again, it's illegal to break into a safe. Parrot, don't you know any other words? And with that, the parrot smiles and says, yes. Sick 'em! Motivation, getting people to sick them is a very important part of our lives, whether it's at home, trying to get somebody to take the garbage out, whether it's business, trying to get somebody to do the tasks that they are supposed to do, whether it is in the church, and I don't need to fill in the blank on that, I think I'll let you. How best do we motivate people in our relationships with them? Again, I am convinced that smiles, laughter, and good humor are very, very important. For example, warm words of encouragement and affirmation, like these words from one of America's leading poets, Muhammad Ali, who spoke these words to a group of inner city students. Stay in college, get the knowledge, stay there till you're through. If they can make penicillin out of moldy bread, they can sure make something out of you. We all like to be encouraged and affirmed. It's a very important aspect of motivation. You may remember Aesop's old fable about the sun and the wind up in heaven one day, kind of bored, didn't have anything to do, and suddenly they see this traveler going down the road, and they say, hey, let's get in a little contest, see who can get that traveler to take his cloak off. So the wind goes first, and he huffs, and he puffs, and he blows in a gale of fury, and the more he blows, the closer the traveler holds his protective cloak to him. And then it's the sun's turn, and he just begins to shine, and already the traveler's loosening up his cloak. And then when the sun turns on his full afternoon splendor, the traveler throws his cloak aside. I don't know about you, but in my dealings with my fellow human beings, I have found that nearly always it is true that the wind of criticism and judgment and condemnation only causes the person being criticized to hold that protective cloak closer, making any kind of deep, intimate relationship between the critic and the criticized very, very difficult. On the other hand, through the warmth of understanding and caring communicated with smiling lips and twinkling eyes and warm words, that protective cloak can be opened up and eventually just flung away so that all kinds of intimate, meaningful relationships can occur between people. I've had lots of occasions like that in my life. Let me tell you just about one. It's back when I was a student at Texas Lutheran College. Some of you here know about that school in Seguin, Texas, and at that particular time, the president was the sainted Dr. William F. Crowshar. And I was a resident in an old Army surplus barracks called North Hall, which fortunately is no longer there, and came in one afternoon, hot and thirsty, and headed straight to the Coke machine. And when I went to put my nickel in, which will tell you how long ago this story took place, the door just kind of magically swung open. Seems like the delivery people had just been there, and when they had filled it up and left, they hadn't shut it properly. Well, not being then of the strong moral fiber that I am today, I was unable to resist the temptation of those free Cokes, loaded up a case full of them, took them and stashed them away in my closet in the dorm room. Very shortly, the rest of the boys in the dorm heard about it, cleaned out the machine. Very shortly, the Coke company heard about it, passed the word on to Dr. Crowshar. Next morning, he called a meeting of all the dorm residents. And in his very gracious manner, Dr. Crowshar communicated to us his great disappointment in us as young Christian gentlemen. But those of you who knew Dr. Crowshar know he also had a little Prussian in him. And he communicated very clearly what the consequences would be if it was discovered who it was that had broken into the machine. Well, folks, I may be a sinner, but I've never been accused of being a dumb sinner. So reading the handwriting on the wall, I decided that confession was probably the smartest thing to do. So I went up to Doc Crowshar and said that the machine had not been broken into. And I knew, because I was the first one there when it was still full, the delivery people had just hadn't shut the door properly. And then, reluctantly, very reluctantly, I told Dr. Crowshar I had taken a case of those Cokes and they were in the closet in my room. And then it was that Dr. Crowshar put his hand on my shoulder, looked me squarely in the eye, and spoke these totally unexpected words, "Burke, I want to commend you. I want to commend you for putting those Cokes away so the other boys couldn't steal them." Well, that was the day I learned something about the grace of God and the graciousness of his servant, Dr. William F. Crowshar. It was a day the sun shone on me. It was a day I was dealt with warmly and humanly. It was a day that I will never forget because it was a day I learned the value of humor in human relations. So the holy, healing power of humor, God's amusing grace, it is vitally important for the health of our bodies, our souls, and our relationships. So smile, just for the health of it. Now, not only do I believe in and speak about humor, but I try to practice what I preach, and I have been doing this for several years by sharing a little routine that has grown out of my experience as a TV news anchorman, and then combining that with my experience as a minister, and coming up with a possible religious news program. Now, hey, folks, religious broadcasting is where it's at. That's where all the fame and fortune is in this business. And right now, there's a big gap out there as many of our TV evangelists have gone on to, well, you know where they go. And somebody has to fill that void, so why not me? Why not Ron Burke? So here is a short sample of my proposed show. In national and international religious news today, after months of investigative reporting, our Jerusalem correspondent, Solomon Gomorrah, has finally discovered the real reason why Israel decided to stay out of the Desert Storm Coalition a couple of years ago. It was because the last time the Jews listened to a bush, they spent 40 years wandering in the desert. And in a related story, Saddam Hussein is back in the news. Today, Hussein announced that he has taken 12 well-known American Lutheran preachers hostage. And if ransom is not paid, Hussein threatens that every Sunday for the next 12 weeks, one of those preachers will be released. And in his weekly press conference answering pressing problems of the world, Almighty God was asked, will the merger of all United States Lutherans into one church ever occur? And with a smile, God answered, well, there's good news and bad news in regard to that question. The answer is yes, but not in my lifetime. And this late breaking news just in, a group of bank robbers broke into the chapel at Texas A&M University today and escaped with $100,000 in pledges. For those of you up north, it would be a Swedish church. So. We'll be back with more news after this message. Say, folks, would you like to be baptized, but you're afraid of water? Then why not try the Lutheran Church, where we baptize by sprinkling? Our motto, a little dab will do ya. And speaking of the Lutherans, if you've been wondering about the excavation going on around the foundation of the new German Shepherd Lutheran Church, it's all because of last week's city council meeting. The council passed a law that no massage parlor should be located within 300 feet of a house of worship. The Lutherans have until the end of the month to move their church. And in local Lutheran news, Holy Gesundheit Lutheran Church is beginning a new study of nomadic tribes of the Old Testament. This evening, three of these tribes will be discussed: the Amorites, the Midianites, and the Samsonites. It's interesting how different audiences listen to their radios. In other news regarding Lutherans, reports are that ELCA synods across the country are facing enormous budget deficits. In fact, things are getting so bad that one bishop has had to secure a part-time position in a chess set. I'll keep trying until... And researchers in genetics at Pacific Lutheran College have succeeded in crossing a Jehovah's Witness with a Lutheran. And what they have is someone who comes to your door but doesn't have anything to say. Finally found your level. Okay. And in other news regarding research at schools of the ELCA around the country, the St. Olaf Physics Department has come up with an answer to that burning question, how many Lutherans does it take to change a light bulb? Their conclusion, 5. 1 to actually change the bulb, and 4 to say how much they preferred the old one. And biblical scholars at Luther College recently discovered an ancient manuscript containing God's answer to Moses' request for help when during the Exodus he found himself caught between the Red Sea and the Egyptians. And the manuscript reads, and I quote, and God said, I've got good news and I've got bad news, Moses. The good news, I'll part the seas, I'll let your people pass through, and I'll destroy the Egyptians. The bad news, first of all, you're going to have to file an environmental impact statement. And in related research, in looking into the age-old question of why Moses wandered in the wilderness 40 years, Gustavus Adolphus biblical scholars have found out that it was because even back then, men wouldn't stop and ask directions. And finally, results of a survey taken by the Comparative Religion Department of Texas Lutheran College reveals that the major difference between Baptist and Lutherans is Lutherans speak to each other when they meet in the liquor store. And that's it for tonight's religious news. This is Ron Burke leaving you with this thought from Linda Ellerbe. A good time to laugh is any time you can. Bye now. Well, thank you very much. Who said Lutherans can't laugh? Well, I hope that you feel better now and that you have experienced some of the things I was talking about. And for the next few minutes, we have to be out of here so somebody can come in and preach, you know, and do worship. I will entertain any feedback or comments that you might like to make on some of the things that have just been said. You would like for me to repeat why you're a woman, aren't you? It's because even back then, men would not stop and ask directions. There, are you happy that I said it twice? I'm not putting you down, I just... Every once in a while, I do that to an all-male audience, and it just dies. It just lays on. But we'd be nice to women tonight. So. They are taping it. In case you are not aware, Holden Village tapes all presentations, and they are available very quickly at some of the listening stations around that you can sit down and listen to them are the people who are not here. Can listen to this, or you can listen to anything that you miss, and they are also available for purchase. Yes, I do not know the price right off. In fact, the guy who's taping this left, and he's eating supper. So. He's going to listen to it later on tape. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. The subject tomorrow. Let us play. The place of play in a world of work. And it will be a little bit different. I will do a lot of different things here. This is kind of my stand-up routine, keynote speech. Tomorrow we'll start out with a little film that National Geographic did not long ago on play among animals, humans being an animal. It's an excellent discussion starter as to the place of play. So. Thank you for asking about tomorrow. It's 10:30 and it's over Fireside, I think. Yeah. Did I answer all of your questions about humor? Let me just say a couple of things. We're supposed to plug, the bookstore wants us to help them. I have a couple of books that are over there. The Texans know that since 1980 I've been writing a column of humor and reflection for various district and synod and papers, and we have compiled those into two books. The first one, What's a Nice God Like You Doing in a Place Like This? And the second one, You Can't Walk on Water If You Stay in the Boat. And they're both over there. There are lots and lots of books currently being written on this whole subject of Christianity and humor. The one, I think, if you just want to get one that's very readable and I think really has the nuts and bolts of it, is one by a fellow by the name of Cal Samra. And I didn't really check in the bookstore. It has been in the bookstore here, and I'm pretty sure they have it. The Joyful Christ, The Healing Power of Humor. Cal Samra is the founder of the Fellowship of Merry Christians. How many of you are familiar with the Fellowship of Merry Christians? One. One Merry Christian in this whole crowd. Well, I am fortunate to be a consulting editor, along with several other Lutherans, Marilyn Belgum, whom some of you Midwesterners know, Rich Benham, so forth and so on. But it is, they published the Joyful Noise Letter. And it's kind of a fun thing with cartoons and jokes and stories, but it also has in it some of the things like I was talking to you about this evening, about some of the historical places that humor and laughter have had in the church. So if you are interested in it, I do have one of the latest copies up here, my only one, and it does have the information on where you can get it and the subscription details and so forth. One of the nice things about it, that if you are a congregation and you subscribe to this, you can reprint all of the cartoons in here or any other things. All you have to do is give the source. I'm sure right now, every time your church newsletter does a cartoon, they write to the cartoonist and get permission and pay them whatever, right? Well, you don't have to do that with this. I didn't bring along, for some reason, one of their most popular things, and there's a little bitty, you can't see it here, but kind of are attempting to foster pictures, portraits of a smiling Christ. How many of you have ever seen a portrait of Christ smiling? Very few of them. There are around. And they have a classic one that they do in posters and on postcards, and you can buy those of a smiling Christ. And a lot of churches buy those. We took a group, like I am leading this, leading is not the right word. I made arrangements to get this group of Texans up here. We do a little traveling. In the summer, I took a group of Texans to North Carolina, and we were way back up in the Smokies, Blue Ridge Mountains, and there's a couple of Episcopal churches with these frescoes. If any of you have been in North Carolina, you really got to search for them, but they are fabulous pieces of art, and just little old bitty churches. And in one of them, they also have other artwork, and here on the wall was the original of this, which is called The Laughing Christ. It's totally different than others, but some of the artists of today are trying to capture that element of Christ, and I find that very interesting. So that's one thing. The bookstore over here has several publications of a humorous nature. One that I just discovered today and just finished reading this afternoon. It took me 30 minutes to read it. So how many of you are familiar with Lutheran Basement Women? Haven't read that? Oh, it's great. It's over there. Well, the authors of that, who are Midwest Norwegians, who we Texas Germans don't really understand, but every once in a while they do say something that we can laugh at. They have a new one out called A Catholic Lutheran Lexicon. They glorified Mary, we glorified rice. And I understand that's really funny in the Midwest. We Texans don't get that at all. But it is a contrast of, for example, of the Catholics, what they had, and then the Lutherans. Now, we have in Texas, you know, some German communities that are half Lutheran and half Catholic, and we understand the conflict. So evidently the same thing holds true in the Midwest. For example, they had the Pope, we had Martin Luther. They had archbishops, we had synod presidents. They had vicars, we had Vicks inhalers. They had friars, we had friars too, and pullets. So it's got some fun things in there, and if you are Norwegian, there are a lot of Norwegian words in here that I have no idea what they mean. You should appreciate that. Texans, you may find a laugh or two. They had orders, we took orders. But it's what are some of the others? They had vaults, we had faults. They had holy mothers, we had hefty mothers. I like that. I understand that. They had Anne, the patron saint of housewives, we had county extension agents. And they went to the classic one, why it's here. They went to Villa Maria, we went to Holden Village. I don't know where Villa Maria is, but fortunately, and also the other person who has made laughter okay again among Lutherans is one fella by the name of Garrison Keillor, who even we in Texas are familiar with. And he has some classic things. Really, the thing I like about Garrison Keillor is he is not only hilariously funny, but he is so sensitive in his humor. I don't know whether you ever stop to think about that and analyze his humor. It's never sarcastic or put down. It is really a sympathetic, empathetic kind of humor. And I am so glad that we finally have someone representing Lutheran humor. The story is told about Danny Thomas. Some of us remember Danny Thomas, who did a nightclub act for years, and he had a piano player who was his piano player for years, who was a Lutheran. And in part of his act, Danny Thomas told several jokes on various Christian denominations. And one night, his Lutheran pianist asked him, he said, why don't you ever tell any Lutheran jokes? And Danny Thomas come back, did you ever see a funny Lutheran? Well, fortunately, Garrison Keillor has changed that. It's been fun being with you. I hope that this has been meaningful for you, not only some of the words, but some of the experience. And we will be talking about play tomorrow, and then we'll get into some other ways of dealing with stress, talk about rest and silence and solitude. Let me just leave you with one thing that I picked up from Mark Russell, one of my favorite political cartoonists who does a little monthly TV show on public television, and he told one the other night, he said that they have just come out with, Jonathan, this is for you, the computer freaks in the crowd, that they have just come out with a brand new software designed especially for churches. It's called Stained Glass Windows 95. Good night, all. We'll see you at Vespers.